know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
This is Robert Bickers of the Go-Betweens, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the air on 90.7 FM on Monday, September 19th, including you can hop on the Afrosonic Taxi at 10 a.m. with new music from Ina Maja, Theus Daria, and King Cora, among others. Then Brendan Donegan is playing favorites live from the WGXC Hudson Studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street at 11 a.m. At 4 p.m., we are live from Western Massachusetts, where Kieran Riley beams in on the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 8 p.m., we're live from Acro with J.D. Eisman and his show The Spell, with futuristic soul, cosmic leaning role, and lost classics, and more. Then at 10 p.m., we're live from Catskill with Nancy Giles and Carmen Borgia from the Worthy Soundworks Studio in Catskill. Variety show featuring stand-up comedy, music, and more on the radio until midnight at 90.7 FM WGXC. Turn out for a special performance from Leah Bertucci, Sunday, September 18th at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Bertucci is performing on electronics, voice, samples, and multi-channel radio using four low-range FM transmitters provided from Wavefarm and used to send audio throughout the performance to radios installed within the labyrinth walls of Opus 40 to create a spatialized sonic gesture. Audience members are urged to circulate among the Opus 40 grounds to hear, to make their own live mix of the performance. Bertucci is working with Ben Vita, Zach Layton, and Victoria Keddy on the project. It's Sunday, September 18th from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors approved September 14th a resolution in opposition to new state gun legislation over the protestations of the board's Democrats who argued that the voting process was rushed. The new gun laws were signed by Governor Kathy Hochul on July 1st in the aftermath of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling June 23rd that struck down a century-old New York concealed carry law. The new legislation restricts the carrying of concealed weapons in designated sensitive locations, including government buildings, hospitals, bars, restaurants, and public transportation. The laws also expanded on eligibility requirements under the state's concealed carry permitting process, including mandated firearm training courses for all applicants. The Columbia County resolution calls on municipalities throughout the state and organizations, including the American Civil Liberties Union, to contest the state laws in court. Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell voted in favor of the resolution. Quote, I believe honest people who have done everything according to the law in getting a pistol permit and a concealed carry permit, they've dotted their I's and crossed their T's, and then all of a sudden everything changes for them, unquote, Morrell said. Quote, they could accidentally walk into an establishment with his concealed weapon and then be convicted of a felony when they really haven't done anything wrong, unquote. New Lebanon Town Supervisor and Board Minority Leader Trista Haltling, a self-described gun owner from, quote, responsible gun-owning family, unquote, said she had questions about the board's proposed resolution. Haltling said she could not take a stand on the resolution either way because she had not been given enough time to read the state legislation. Hudson 3rd Ward Supervisor Michael Chimides was the only supervisor to oppose the resolution. Quote, we don't want to rush through this legislation. We want to be thorough. We want to be careful. And we want to do things not based on political motivations, but based on real solutions. I'm not convinced we're doing that, unquote, Chimides said. Haltling was among the supervisors to abstain from the vote based on a lack of time to study the state legislation that was the subject of the measure. The resolution is just an opinion, and Columbia County officials will take no action. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that the Sheriff's Office in Albany and Greene counties, as well as the New York State Police, responded September 15th to a call from a Ravenna Queeman Selkirk School District school bus. The bus had pulled over on the side of the road in West Coxsackie after a student allegedly claimed to have a weapon. According to the Albany County Sheriff's Office, an 8-year-old student said he had a gun and was going to shoot someone on the bus. Another student on the bus told the driver about it, authorities said. RCS Superintendent Brian Bailey said the driver immediately notified transportation dispatch. Quote, our school resource officers and emergency services were also notified. Police arrived on the scene and investigated. There were no weapons found on or around the school bus, unquote, Bailey said. He said the school will address this issue through the student code of conduct. Bailey acknowledged the large police presence that responded to the threat and noted that such incidents are taken seriously. The student involved will not be immediately returning to class. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Chris Bragg reports in the Times Union that U.S. Representative Lee Zeldin, the Republican nominee for governor from Long Island on September 16th, called for an investigation into $637 million in spending by Governor Kathy Hochul's administration to buy rapid coronavirus tests last winter. The Times Union reported the same day that California paid 45% less per test for the same brand purchased by New York. If New York had paid the same price as California, it would have saved $286 million. Quote, this needs to be investigated, unquote, Zeldin said at a press conference in Manhattan. Quote, I would love to know what the Attorney General of New York thinks about this case. What does the New York State Comptroller think about this, unquote. California bought directly from the manufacturer of the tests, but New York purchased them through a third-party distributor that took an unspecified cut. Third-party distributor, Digital Gadgets, is owned by a New York City family that has given nearly $300,000 to Hochul's campaign. Zeldin said Friday, quote, I would love for the Hochul administration to tell you about how they tried to go directly to that company to get it from them directly, to cut out the middleman, as was their duty as stewards of tax dollars, unquote. Hochul spokesperson did not immediately answer a question about whether the administration sought to buy the test directly from the manufacturer, and a health department spokesperson has declined comment on the matter. Records show that when Digital Gadgets made an initial offer to sell the state 26 million tests for $13 each, Hochul's office approved the deal the same day. The governor's office argues it needed to quickly acquire a significant number of tests before schools reopened after the holidays on January 3rd, and that Digital Gadgets was uniquely able to supply a large quantity of tests before then. Republican State Senator Sue Serino on September 16th called for Attorney General Letitia James and Albany County District Attorney David Soares to investigate the matter, a call echoed by Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
The impacts of colonialism outlive the British Queen. I am Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. It's long been said the sun never sets on the British Empire, referring to the United Kingdom's colonies around the globe. Will the death of Queen Elizabeth II trigger further shrinking of the empire, as former colonies now in the British Commonwealth debate whether to permanently sever ties? With its history of slavery, concentration camps, executions, and torture, what would reparations and accountability look like? On her 21st birthday in 1947, Elizabeth, 5 years before her coronation as queen, said,
"I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong."
Elizabeth was in South Africa, a British Commonwealth nation, 1 year before its white minority imposed the racist policies of apartheid over the majority black and other non-white populations. Over the next half century, South Africa's apartheid regime, shored up by the United Kingdom and the United States, demonstrated not all in the Queen's imperial family fared well.
What I'd like to see is the dismantling of this notion of the Commonwealth.
That's Cornell University professor Mukoma Wangugi speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He was born in the U.S. but raised in Kenya, the son of the renowned Kenyan writer Ngugi wa Thiong'o.
Commonwealth, whose wealth?
Asked Professor Mukoma Wangugi.
The book I'm working on now on Africans and African Americans took me to Keta in Ghana, right? Keta is where slaves were being taken from, right? And it's a very depressed, you know, the aftershocks, if you want to call it that, or the trauma of slavery still, it's evident, right? It's poor, depressed, and so on and so forth. Maya Angelou called it melancholic, actually, right? Then from there, I left Keta, then I went to Bristol in England, right? Bristol was a slave trading port where... you know, yeah, and it's thriving. It looks like a good old-fashioned bohemian town. Most people know it now because of the dismantling of the statue of Colston, who was one of the slave traders. But at any rate, we can see the effects of slavery, right? We can see the effects of colonialism, and we can see how the wealth of England was built.
In 1952, Elizabeth was in Kenya when she learned of the death of her father, King George VI, and became queen. Kenya suffered for decades under British colonial rule. An organized armed resistance rose up in the 1950s called the Mau Mau. Harvard historian Caroline Elkins documented Britain's violence against Kenyans in her Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Imperial Reckoning, The Untold Story of Britain's Gulag in Kenya.
Nearly 1.5 million Kikuyu, or Africans, were detained in detention camps or emergency villages, barbed wire villages, as a way of suppressing Mau Mau. This was a story about systematic violence, torture, murder, and massive cover-up. And the bottom line is that serious crimes happened on the Queen's Imperial Watch. In fact, her picture hung in every detention camp in Kenya, as detainees were beaten in order to exact their loyalty to the British Crown.
Many nations still struggle with the impacts of British colonialism.
Formerly enslaved and colonized nations and peoples, like those of the Caribbean, including Barbados, have been inserted in that international order in a structurally subordinate and exploitative manner.
David Kamasyong is Barbados' ambassador to the Caribbean community. He was speaking on Democracy Now! Last December, just after Barbados severed its Commonwealth relationship with the UK, removing Queen Elizabeth as head of state and declaring itself sovereign.
Barbados was the first society in human history that was built totally on the basis of slavery, its economy, its social system, its ideology. And so that's our history. The royal family was deeply involved in the British slave trade and the system of African enslavement.
The Prime Minister of the Caribbean nation of Antigua and Barbuda, Gaston Brown, announced this week the country will hold a referendum within 3 years to decide on complete separation from the UK. Dobreen Omard, the chairperson of the Antigua and Barbuda Reparations Commission and an ambassador at large of Antigua, said this week on Democracy Now,
she has managed to cloak the historical brutality of empire in this veneer of grandeur and pomp and pageantry, I guess, and graciousness. But I think that at this point in time, we need to examine that history a lot more closely.
Queen Elizabeth's eldest son has succeeded her and is now King Charles III. He'll be confronted with rising demands for accountability and reparations for the generations of colonial exploitation that enriched the United Kingdom and the royal family, himself included. The Windsor family's estimated wealth is in the billions of dollars.
The Caribbean Reparations Plan talks of development.
Again, that's Dobreen Omard, ambassador at large of Antigua.
Where the hurt of enslavement and genocide continues to exist and continues to impact on the lives of Caribbean people today. You have committed crimes against humanity, and that there is a moral and an ethical demand that you acknowledge these crimes.
King Charles III should heed the call of all these former colonial subjects and answer for the innumerable harms inflicted worldwide in the name of the British monarchy. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that officials in Great Barrington are discussing renaming Squaw Road. Last week, the federal government announced that nearly 650 sites in the U.S. that formerly bore the word Squaw have been renamed. That includes the former Squaw Peak on Monument Mountain near Stockbridge, which was changed last year to Pescawasso Peak. The Squaw Swamp in Rensselaer County was renamed Black Swamp. The word squaw is considered an offensive slur. Great Barrington town manager Mark Pruhinsky said residents of 17 out of 18 households along the road met this summer about the name change, and the select board will discuss the issue on October 3rd. Pruhinsky said in an email, and I quote, "I think we'll be ready to move forward with a decision very soon now," end quote. In January, somebody shared the road sign for Squaw Road from its post. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Alex Galt reports for the Post Star that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik is one of 86 co-sponsors of the House version of the bill from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham to ban most abortions after 15 weeks nationwide. While local politicians have been promising abortion rights are safe in this state, the, and I quote, "Protecting Pain-Capable Unborn Children from Late-Term Abortions Act," end quote, if passed, would override state laws and ban abortions in New York. Current New York law permits abortions for viable pregnancies up to 24 weeks of age, although allows the medical procedure later if the health of the mother or fetus is at risk. A statement from Stefanik's advisor, Alex DeGrasse, said, and I quote, "Congresswoman Stefanik, a young mother, is pro-life with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. She strongly opposes taxpayer funding for abortions and supports the Hyde Amendment. Her constituents are proud of her long pro-life record throughout her time in Congress," end quote. The Hyde Amendment passed in Congress in 1977, banning federal funding for abortion except when the mother's life is in danger and can be saved with the procedure. Matt Costelli, running against Stefanik in the 21st Congressional District that will include Rensselaer County, disagrees. He said, and I quote, "Elise Stefanik has put a target on the back of every woman in NY21 and threatens the health of millions of American women by taking away their freedoms. She continues to demonstrate that she is willing to sell out anyone for her own benefit, willing to deprive women of the right to make decisions about their own bodies, willing to threaten the lives of women all to advance her own career. This dangerous and unconstitutional ban makes it clear that Elise Stefanik is unfit for leadership and wholly unfit to represent of New York 21, end quote. Read more about this story in the Post Star. Chris Bragg reports in the Times Union that the state of California paid 45% less than New York for the same COVID-19 test supplied by a donor to Governor Kathy Hochul. New York spent $637 million on the test from the New Jersey-based distributor Digital Gadgets, LLC. That is $286 million more than the price California was charged. Digital Gadgets, LLC, is a company owned by a New York City family that has donated nearly $300,000 to Hochul's campaign. California bought the test directly from the manufacturer at $6.75 per test, while New York paid the distributor $12.25 per test. New York bought the test 3 weeks earlier than California during a shortage of tests that may explain some of the price disparity. Bill Hammond, senior fellow for health policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy, said, and I quote, "The price is just way off the map, and we still haven't heard anything close to a convincing explanation for why the price was so high and why the Hochul administration not only accepted a price that was so high, but made this their primary supplier. If the tests were being sold to another state at the same price, at a better price, New York should have been able to get something closer to that price, even if the state was snapping up the last test available," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXE renewable weather forecast. We start each renewable weather forecast with the current price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says $3.79 is the cheapest gallon of gas available. That's at the Mobil in Palinville. And then we look at the air quality forecast, which has gotten twice as worse as Saturday. It's up to a 22, which is still in the good range from 11 on Saturday. Then we look at the UV index, and it is a 5, a little better than yesterday in the moderate category. National Weather Service in Albany says there is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 p.m. on Sunday. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 78 and a west wind 5 to 7 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Sunday night, there's a 30% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. with cloudy skies and a low around 61. Monday, there's an 80% chance of showers. Possibly, again, a thunderstorm in the afternoon with a high of 74 and a southwest wind 5 to 8 miles per hour in the morning. Monday night, 80% chance of rain again with a low around 58. Tuesday, there's only a 20% chance of showers, mainly before 2 p.m. Then it becomes mostly sunny with a high of 74 and a low around 55. You're listening to the radio, WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. And I'm Tom Rowe, live in Acre. We're speaking with Lisa Thomas, the noted Athens filmmaker, and more. You're also on the board of the Athens Cultural Center. And what else, Lisa?
Well, I'm also the film fairy for the Dust Bowl Fairy, so I'm one of the fairies, too, even though you don't get the lead fairy writer coolie, you get me.
That's okay. Anyway. We love you, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Ryder got tied up with something she couldn't get away from, so she texts me and she's like, "Can you fill in?" And I certainly can fill in. I know all about this thing that's coming up.
So tell us what is coming up Saturday in Athens.
So essentially, it's not tomorrow, but it's Saturday, September 24th, and it's going to be a kind of a really cool showcase of the band, the Dust Bowl Fairies, that performs in the area sometimes live, and with film projections behind them, and which is something that we do occasionally. Like they've done that up at the Linda, and they did it you know, at some different venues like down in Southampton. And anyway, so whenever we get the opportunity to kind of do these like sort of film projections behind them in certain venues, we like to do it. And there's this church, it's called The Church on 12 South Franklin Street in Athens that is kind of allowing us to sort of give it a huge makeover for the night of Saturday, September 24th. And we're going to make it this kind of whole gothic film music affair.
Yeah, I love to go into churches I've never been in before. Usually, if you're not that religion, you don't tend to have a reason to go. But this is like a good reason to actually see the inside of the church, right?
Yeah, I think Carol Bernard and her husband Todd, like, they've had it for a few years, and their idea always was to kind of make it this exhibition type space. And I know they open it up for like the Victorian stroll, and they have music in there. Occasionally, but mostly they've been just trying to renovate it, but their idea is really to have it for the arts and exhibitions. So this is, you know, just a few times a year that they open it up, and we're lucky that they're allowing us to come in for this one night event, you know, which will start at 8 p.m. It'll probably go for about 90 minutes or so, but I have a whole slew of films that I'm going to be showcasing, one of which is a brand new one that I've never shown anywhere before, called Lost in Time, which is releasing with a new song that the band's coming out with on their new album. So that'll be like the first time that's ever seen. But a lot of them are videos that I've had projected for them in the past. So, but it's always fun when you have something new that you're unveiling, and to see how the crowd reacts to that.
And does the band have something new to unveil too?
Yeah, so they've been working on a new album called Carnival Dust, which is like an EP that's being released this fall. It's actually not out online yet, so the album's only sort of just available, like, limited. I think they've printed just, like, 100 CDs or something that are, like, a limited edition pre-release, you know, version that you can only get at their live shows right now until it comes out online. But, yeah, they have that, and so they'll be playing those new songs and a lot of their old favorites as well. But it's pretty exciting because they have a new album that's on the verge of being released out into the world, and people will be able to hear that new stuff tonight.
And tell us what else you've been up to lately.
Well, I spend a lot of time doing stuff with the Athens Cultural Center. I'm on their board and kind of head up their film exhibitions. We just finished our free film series that was down in Riverfront Park in Athens. And we had five different films that we showcased over the summer, one each month on the second Saturdays. And we'll be doing that again next year. And yeah, in my own film stuff, like, I'm working on a new screenplay. I'm a writer director aside from just being a producer, and I do a lot of producing for Adult Swim. So I produce like animated TV series, but you know, I have my hands always kind of in a lot of creative endeavors, and it's mostly film related. So for like the band, I do a lot of music videos, but then I do narrative projects, and most people know me for doing animated, like producing animated TV series.
And what's going on with the Athens Cultural Center? Is there anything new to report there?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff happening at the Athens Cultural Center. I mean, they have this event coming up on the 24th, but they have a show that's opening this weekend. It's like a landscape show. Man, I should be on their website so I get it right, because otherwise I'm going to say it wrong. But they have the folks, it's like a plein air show with, let me tell you right now. It's the Seasons of Green show, which is with the Greenland Trust. So that's happening, and it's opening tomorrow. I think it's from 3 to 6, and it's a pretty cool show with a lot of local artists, painters. And I think there's like a raffle that's a part of it, so that you could win either money or a case of wine or one of the paintings from the actual show is going to be raffled off that night, as well. And then they have like a small work show coming up later this year, which is like a member show. And then they have the Victorian stroll that they do every December. And they have a lot of like really big exhibitions that they're planning for 2023, which we've been meeting about. And those will be unveiled soon.